You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Nicole Hale. And if you're watching the video, she's sort of a swirling black thing at this moment. But hopefully she'll be here momentarily. So now she's Swerve and Deadpool. Which, hey, there's that third-party Swerve coming out, and I'm kind of excited about it because I want it.
What are they calling it? What's the funny name for it?
Veer.
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 I see what they did. I am stupid third-party names for toys. What was this? I saw. What was it called? Oh my goodness! It was what's the most recent? What do they call the Gears one?
Oh, Cogs.
That's it. And I saw it was a thread title on the Allspark, and I saw it from a distance. It said, Cogs and Manatee. And I didn't know what it was. I just clicked on it, and it was like, Cogs and the Manatee, they're cups. Wednesdays at 8 on NBC.
Oh, my God.
I'm so bloody sick of these dumbass names third-party companies keep coming up for their things, the duck around things.
Yep.
Nobody ever calls it. Anyway, they just call it not name. Funny.
Yeah, that was really funny for like a month, and now that's sort of gotten old.
I remember when you remember Jim Henson's dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Not the mama.
Yeah, that's well. You remember when they did that third party Fallen figure?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody on the 2005 boards just called it not the Fallen, and it was the only thing I could think of.
Not the Fallen.
Yes. So, it is Fanboy Versus More News That We'll Groan Over, as we'll talk about something in a second. Otherwise, it's kind of a slim comic week, so we're not going to have an end-of-show review yet again.
It's slow for you guys. I had a good week.
Well, it's not slow. I mean, we know you had a very good week, and I don't mean to say it's slow. There's plenty of good stuff out, so I don't want to say it that way. It's just not impressive enough to make us feel the need to drone on about it for an extra 10 or so minutes.
That's because you're not reading Thor. You know, that's your fault, not the comics.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we could clear
December
that up.
December should be quite a busy month. We should have a busy December because we only have technically 3 weeks worth of comics in December.
Yeah, and of course that's going to be...
There's no mass release on December 26th. A few companies are...
When is the Hickman's Avengers? Is that next
week? That's next week.
Yeah!
Yeah, see, we're already off to a good start. We know what top of the show is next week.
Yeah, right? There's no question there.
No companies are releasing anything on December 26th, apart from a few select things that are being shipped to stores ahead of time. Like, there's no Diamond delivery that week, so there's like only half a dozen books or so out that week. So the other 3 weeks of the month have to pick up the slack, so it should be quite busy.
700
is that week, yes. Mm-hmm. I hope you're ready for random issues of Justice League and Aquaman from DC.
Woohoo! Oh, man.
And a Turtles miniseries from IDW.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think Amazing Spider-Man might outsell those.
Did you get I saw you got your Turtles DVD?
I did get my Turtles DVD.
Very nice.
What's this, the box?
Turtles are awesome.
Yeah, I'm on a Turtle kick at the minute.
So it's the box set that looks like the turtle van, right?
Yeah, it's huge, actually. It's a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be.
I saw you posted an image of the Shredders. You had like two
Yes,
Shredders.
I also bought the... I stumbled across the new Turtles toys. Reached the UK this weekend, so I decided... I'd always been planning to just buy the Shredder anyway, because back when the 2003 series came out, like, I went mad for all the toys, and I bought them all, and after a while, I looked at them and went, this was a mistake. And I got rid of them all.
I
got rid of them all, but
bad.
Oh, I thought he was fine as far as
the
Turtles.
So do you like
toys.
The new Shredder?
I got it.
I'm not a fan of it. I like the Turtles toys, but it seems like anything outside the four Turtles toys, I've been disappointed with.
Seems about par for the course for a Playmates Turtles figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have the 2003 Shredder is not He's got elbows, which beats the 2003 Shredder, you know? The 2003 Shredder is the one I kept from the 2003 Darling, so that's the
Nicole
picture.
Nicole is here.
He ain't got no elbows, so it's like, this Shredder has elbows. I don't know, I mean, I don't know, I mean, it would be nice if he had some knees, maybe, but he's not missing any key articulation beyond knees.
He's just funny looking for some reason. I don't know what it is.
Have you met Playmate Toys, brother?
I have original Shredder. Trust me, I know how shitty
you know
Shredder
funny looking
is.
Man, in that case.
You know, funny looking, but like, I don't know, I got this Turtles toy, so I was like, God, you know, Donatello and Raph is awesome looking, and then I got Shredder's like, what happened? You know, he just doesn't look like he's from the same toy. It's just something about it.
It could be Bandai, you know, and then you'd be really, yeah. I picked up a bunch of the new Power Rangers Megaforce stuff and got this Robo Knight for free, and I got ripped off because it's
yeah.
Awful.
Let's continue to pretend Bandai that screws over Power Rangers figures despite delivering every toy consistently for the last 13 years. Yeah, woo.
No. I'm not knocking Bandai. I'm saying that this particular figure is not their forte. You know, it's not like the typical thing that they do. The Megazords and stuff are awesome. And, like, those are, yeah, I mean, because I was even thinking that. I'm like, I am driving home with a full set of Megazords for a show that won't be out for, like, 2 months. I wish other toy companies would do that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Turtles as, like, the first. What's the first wave? Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Donatello, April, Splinter, Shredder, Foot Clan, and a Krang. What the hell's left, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no, don't worry. Wacky Extreme Sports Turtles by March. Don't worry. But, you know, that's what we get whenever you front-load the toy cast. Well, with Transformers, as I gestured to my right.
We get a Fugitoid. I'll buy a Fugitoid.
They put him in the show.
But Transformers, it's like...
They'll string out the main cast, and that will annoy, but it does mean that there's always something worth paying attention to always happening in Transformers. It's a two-edged sword. It's like, you are going to get Wacky Extreme Sports Turtles by the middle of next year. They'll probably be middle of next year. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that there will be at least two strange themed varieties of turtles.
They're already out, aren't they? I thought
I
already saw
about, like, the wacky waving fucking sound and light one. I just mean the ordinary 6-inch carded figures.
That's what I'm saying. I thought I already saw.
They have Metalhead out already.
Yeah, and I thought I saw a sports themed figure already. So
possible. I'm not up on the turtle
vehicle. There's like a vehicle where he's wearing like a helmet, like a football player.
Pack-ins with vehicles don't count.
No.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
This is all like fascinating, though.
Turtles and extreme sports turtles, and let's see.
I hope I get
metalized armor wearing turtle.
Oh God!
I want a baseball playing Raphael. I hope that happens.
You know? God.
Remember the Star Trek turtles?
Oh God! Oh God! All right. Well, this is all fascinating.
Hey, I'm not going to complain. The more turtles, the more fun I have.
And I almost picked up turtles because it was such a light week for me, and then I realized I would be really out of the loop, so I chose not to. But anyway,
yeah. Picked up this week's issue, you'd have to pick up last week's because last week was the start of a new arc.
Right, and so see, that's what I'm saying. It was like, oh, I'm out of the loop. I shouldn't do that. But speaking of comic books. So what's going on, Chris, this week? Anything?
Not really. I mean, I think the closest thing we got to news was the suggestion Gail Simone might leave Batgirl, but then she said she wasn't.
She did say she wasn't?
She tweeted that she wasn't. It's just that her DC exclusive contract is up very soon. It's not up already. And it seems like the rumor mill has gone to work, but I would find that unlikely. I mean, a big part of the reason for even talking about that is the fact that a large part, if not like 90% of the reason or more of the reason that Batgirl has managed to succeed in the New 52 is because of Gail Simone.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And if she leaves the book, will her fans stay with it? Because you
it
know,
will,
there. I mean,
it will be canceled.
Judge,
I haven't even.
I think it will be.
I mean, I'm a huge Gail fan, and I haven't even stayed with it. So.
Yeah. Same here.
That's actually one of the three DC comics I'm still keeping up with.
So. And it's the only thing that she's left on, so it does sort of, you know, it does sort of give the impression that she may be, you know,
well,
backing away from her DC exclusive anyway.
Just tell me what you're going to do at Marvel, Gil, and I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Yes. I would take a Chief or a Punisher comic from Gail Simone in a heartbeat.
Well, and Gail's been, you know, Gail's been pretty friendly with Kelly Sue lately, and so, you know, and Marvel has been more female friendly over the last year than DC has. DC has become quite the boys' club.
I think the good thing is that it doesn't feel like a reaction against DC's boys' club mentality, and it just feels like they're doing it because it's just because they have ideas for female heroes, and they're not seeing an opening in the market and jumping on it to go, haha, we did this, DC didn't. They're
right.
Doing it because it's worth doing.
It feels organic in that sense, absolutely. So I don't know, we'll see. I would love to see Gail do some stuff, you know, again over at Marvel, and I think there's some potential
there. I mean,
what's
Marvel offering right now? It's got Captain Marvel. It's got Sif's leading Journey into Mystery now. We got this Fearless Defenders thing coming up. That might be it, admittedly. But it's like two more than DC has.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a lot more. So,
You have Kelly Sue, Avengers Assemble as well, which is a really big deal, even if it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, that is a huge deal.
And it was a great comic as well. So
yeah. Yep. Interesting. We'll have to watch that one, see where that one develops. Because she'll also have her independent book coming out. That should be coming out next year, in 2013
What was it?
Leaving Megalopolis will be coming out.
Okay.
That was her Kickstarter book, which I have coming to me. So,
woo!
Yes.
Congratulations.
I put in for that. I've been watching. They've been sending out emails with sort of behind the scenes making of stuff. So
what did her Kickstarter get to? Do you know if it?
Oh my God!
Did it do better than she wanted?
They did so many stretch goals. I mean, they just kept doing stretch goal after stretch goal. I mean, it started out as a book. I think they put it as 30. I think they made 125 or something. They put it as 35,000 was their original goal, and I think they got it up to 125 or something like that.
Awesome.
They started out not having the inker from whoever was doing colors on Secret Six, and were able to add him on and hire him back on to do. So it's basically the Secret Six team doing the book. They went to from softcover to hardcover. They added several pages worth of book behind it and some extra stuff. So that it did really well. Kickstarter is really I think in a way for the comics medium over others, it's really kind of turned into a way to get some stuff done, because so much of doing a comic is on the front end because of publishing and everything else. So I think it's a great method for getting stuff done from creators that you trust, because essentially you're buying it without seeing it. So, but I'm excited for that. I don't know when that's going to be. They're still working on it, obviously. So anyway, other news, any?
Yeah, how about the only other piece of news?
I say like I don't know.
You say like don't know. Look at you. You're like a host or something, queuing up shit. is the furore that erupted around Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn this week when someone dug up a 2-year-old website article he had done on the 50 superheroes that you would most like to have sex with. I mean, he polled readers of this website or his blog, I'm not sure what it was exactly, for their votes and tallied the votes and wrote the article with, you know, just commentary. And what do you think happened?
Do you have a sample of some of the things that were
I don't have the article written in front of me, and I'd quite like not to.
Okay.
Suffice to say, he complimented many of the women on their assorted physical attributes. And Gambit was very high ranking. I think Gambit was in the top because like this was a male and female poll, and you know Wonder Woman was number one, and I Gambit was in the top five. You know, I think there were at least, I think it was a 3-2 issue in the top five for men to women, for women to men, three women to men. But you know, he just commented that the entry on Gambit turned to the subject of three ways, as apparently men had voted for Gambit as well. And Gunn commented that he didn't like the notion of Gambit's balls slapping against his. Not a sentiment I entirely disagree with. But,
what was this written at? I mean, what was the, like, the pretext for the article? I mean, what was this?
Just an article about Superman.
I mean, what was he doing at the time, though? I mean, was he a director?
I don't actually know the answer to that. I'm just reporting the straightforward fact of what the thing was about, because believe me, I heard it, I looked at the article, I spent 30 seconds skimming commentary of the most entirely predictable quality, and said, right, I'm going to go have a sandwich. And just left it at that.
Yeah.
So in the end, superhero sexuality makes Chris have a sandwich. That's basically
perhaps the fandom reaction to superhero.
Lord, if it rains outside, it makes me want to go get a sandwich.
Yeah.
I want a sandwich now, but
I want a sandwich right now. Yeah.
Stop looking at me, I'm not making you guys.
Get out.
No. Sandwich. Well, I would know that, would I?
Pastrami with, you know, some.
You haven't made my sandwich, so I don't know that yet. Anyway, no, I mean.
So there were calls for him to, you know, people saw this as misogyny and homophobia, because apparently one man personally not liking the sense of a man's balls slapping against his is homophobia.
Well,
or a man announcing that he likes the physical attributes of women counts as the hatred of women. That's what
I think.
Is.
Well, I mean,
and
one of the...
for him to resign as Guardians of the Galaxy director, and he came out and apologized for it, frankly, which I frankly don't think he had to do. But I suppose whenever the noise is as loud as it is in as insular a community as this is,
it could not have been that loud, because I didn't hear about this till you guys started talking.
Yeah.
In a cave.
God, yeah. I mean, it was all over the place earlier in the week. But I mean, you know, it was. I mean, like television and stuff. I mean, it wasn't just like.
Oh, I didn't hear. Well, I mean, obviously, I don't live in a country where anybody gives a fig about that sort of thing.
Right.
So I didn't see it on television.
Yeah, I like watch Netflix and occasionally look at Twitter. So if it's not in one of those deep places,
yeah, occasionally Amanda will have, you know, like E on and stuff. So.
I don't even know where the channel is.
It'll make that.
I watched my DVR and I watched my cartoons.
It's on your television. Anyway. So, I mean, I know he did refer to one male character as a fruit, and I don't know if that's... I think that's probably what...
That's probably the height of it. I don't know who that character was offhand. I'm guessing it was North Star, because I couldn't...
I
think it was actually... It was... it may have... I don't... Well... I'm trying to remember, because I did read like some of the text of it, but it wasn't that. I mean, it was a very common character, but I can't remember. Nightwing, maybe, or something.
Really?
Yeah, and then that's what I'm saying. So
yeah, a lot of women want Nightwing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of
people. I mean, in one sense, it's like we have to. I think, you know, it's, we talked about going in last week and talking about how the community is opening up and growing, and you know. We're trying to inclusive sounds like forcing, but I think we're just trying to be more open to realities, as it were. And so I think this is the kind of event that is like the things that we're kind of going through until we get to that point where we sort of have that community aha moment and we can just kind of move on. But you know, right now it's that growing pain. So there's a lot of sensitivity. You know, there's a lot of sensitivity to that issue. And, you know, I think I saw, like, Gail and Brubaker got into a discussion about it. And Brubaker's point was the guy was just trying to be funny. And I think Gail's point was, well, it wasn't very funny. And, you know, being funny
like,
at the...
I chuckled at a few of the things in it, you know.
Well, I think...
I like boobs. And if I would like to write an article about how I like boobs on my personal blog, I would write that article.
Well, and I think that that's a sort of a case of what happened, but yeah, you're also not And that's fine.
My band went on 5 years from now to write a best-selling novel or direct a superstar film. What of it?
Well, and that's kind of where we're at. You know, it's like, I think he wrote it at a time when he wasn't as well known, and now we're at a time later where he is as well known. I don't think it makes it okay on either sense. I mean, what's okay is what's okay. But I don't think it's like sort of grounds to say this is who this person is. You know, and so that's what I say. It's kind of a touchy, it's a difficult thing because, like I said, I don't think we want to just let it completely pass by and say, oh, this is fine. Because there are some things in there that were a little much. You know, it could be considered a little much for...
It's no more or worse than I've seen on any kind of nerd blog, on any, like, mass appeal nerd media list-making blog, like Cracked or IO9 or Topless Robot or anything. It's nothing. It's entirely down to who he is, not what he wrote, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think some of it is like, hey, remember when he wrote this thing? No? Okay, let's pull it out. And
let's be honest here. Somebody actively went and dug that up.
Yeah, because it was like, it was deleted. I mean, they had to go to, like, Internet Archive and find it, because it had been completely removed.
It was an actual act of shaming and mudslinging that did not need to be done. And it's like I was saying in the pre-show, is like, is this what we have to endure now? It's like every week there's some kind of furore. And it's like every time, it's got to the point now where I see an image and I go, oh great, so this is going to be what's going to dominate discussion now for the next month, is it? You know, someone said a stupid thing, someone drew some boobs in a particularly obvious way, that'll dominate the blogosphere for a while. You know, and it's like, I'm not just talking about the women's side of things as well. Like, just this week, I'm not sure what comic it was from. I think it was from Superman. I think it was from, by Kenneth Rocafort. So maybe it was from, Red Hood. But no, Kenneth Rocafort was drawing Superman. Anyway, it was a picture of Superman doing the broke back pose. You know, the one where you have boobs and butt at the same time, that famous comic book pose. And, you know, I looked at that and I was like, great. What I'm now looking at is the picture that misandrists will pull out in order to prove that comic books also objectify men, even though it's the exception, not the rule, compared to the other way around it is with women. It's like, I'm sick of both sides of this argument. Can I not just read Thor?
Yes, you can. Yes, you should.
I mean, you can, but...
Is the price of having to look up news for this show exposure to this over and over again? Can I not just enjoy my funny books?
Yes, so you are going to have to endure it a little bit. But we appreciate that you do. And, you know, because sometimes we have actual news about comics instead of news about comics.
It's quite tiresome.
Yeah.
You know, not all the time. It's just, it seems that this year, something happened.
It's been a rough year.
Tits is enough to infuriate everybody. I think it was the fact that Red Hood and Catwoman came out on the same week
I think it was like DC started with pretty controversial stuff.
Yeah,
we've not forgotten it. You know?
One week, and then the other had come out like 2 weeks later. It wouldn't have been quite as much of a shitstorm, and every single instance of anything remotely resembling an artist lavishing detail on the female form wouldn't be leapt upon the way it has been over the whole course of the last year. I'm just so freaking tired, you guys!
It's okay, though. The year's almost over. Next year will be better.
This is why you guys got to reward.
Take note, Chris McFeely may have a nervous breakdown on today's show.
Right. So
this is why you guys need to read Ninja Turtles, because there should be no sexuality in that.
What? Wait a minute. What the fuck is April O'Neil?
Come on.
Uh-huh. Why does April O'Neil exist in the in turtle continuity other than to be tits?
It's not so much April. The sad thing is, I think that the wolf might be actually sexier than it. You know what I'm talking about, Nicole? You remember the wolf girl person?
Yeah.
So if you like your mutant sexy, if you like your mutant sexy. There might be, you know, something there.
Wow. The ultimate true antidote to this is actually we're going to be talking about, well, not we, Nicole's going to be talking about it this show, but I think ponies is truly the antidote to this shit.
Yeah, and that's probably the only reason we could dig into that this week is because we are going to have ponies later. So it'll all...
deepest, darkest places of the internet and see ponies sexualized.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Up. Oh, no, I know. I've stumbled there accidentally more than once. Sadly, it happened.
Yeah, I...
sometimes, the things I've seen. But I just mean, like, internal to the comic itself, you're not going to get a pony doing the boat back pose.
Yeah, you're not going to get pony on pony, typically, in the comic. I wouldn't think, anyway.
But I hope that's to God the Almighty. Yeah.
What about Super Pets? Are we fine with Super Pets?
Superman Family Adventures is also a good example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's good stuff. So anyway, but this will go on. I mean, like I said, though, I mean, hopefully, just like anything, time cures a lot of things, and hopefully, with time, things will get to the point where this will be improved enough that it won't be the crazy every week sort of thing. You know, that we can kind of be able to recognize it and see what's accessible and what's not. And
like, I thought we were with comics at a point beyond where we would stop to complain about when a female form is drawn in an exaggerated inhuman style in order to exemplify sexual characteristics. But apparently when that happens, that's still worth getting annoyed about because it's never going to stop.
Because it hasn't stopped. So, I mean, it hasn't stopped in the sense where the characters are being objectified. And that, like I said, there's a difference in a character being sexy, which is fine, versus being an object of sex. And that's where that large gray line is that we sort of have to figure out. But
can you objectify something that is not real?
Yes.
Can you?
Yeah.
Does it hurt their feelings if you do?
Yes, because it hurts other people's feelings.
The fictional characters.
Not the fictional characters, but those that identify with it, yeah. I think you can. I mean, it's a debatable point, but...
too reasonable an argument.
So. So, you know. Anyway. We will move on from this and save more for later, because truly we will have more for later. So, we will now move into...
Actually, just before we totally move off, okay. I would like to say that despite my tremendous tiredness, it's not like I'm actually in support of any of this.
No.
So friggin' tired.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's just your old age speaking, Keely.
But, you know. But in the sense we can't... But in the sense of...
You could buy a comic book and ride on the trolley for a shiny knicker. I used to like large breasts. Now I just have them.
Wow. I wish I did a clip show. That'd be great. So, yeah. Cool. Okay. We will move on then. So, Chris, Triplett, talk about a thing, which is comics.
Please.
You know, I think you just, like, knocked me out or something with this conversation. Because, like, any hope I could do to save this show by talking about how awesome Thor number 2 is, it's like, I don't think I could succeed. Because,
yes,
oh my
you
God.
Can. You were telling me how awesome Thor 2 is, so...
Thor 2 is awesome. It's the book
issue
people
two,
should
not,
be buying.
Not number 2.
It really is.
I mean, because this is like, I mean, we're not done with, you know, the, you know, Marvel Now stuff. We're still getting new number ones. Avengers hasn't hit yet. None of us have read it yet. But this is probably my favorite of the new books, which I'm surprised because I was thinking, honestly, it's like, okay, Jason Aaron, he's the writer on it. He does Wolverine and the X-Men. I love Wolverine and the X-Men. But I love Wolverine and the X-Men because it's goofy as shit. It's fun. And, you know, there's like little Nightcrawler dudes running around and playing pranks on people. I mean, there's just stupid shit in that comic, and it's just entertaining. Thor is like some dark shit. I mean, it's basically, I mean, I don't want to say as far as like, you know, like a Marvel Max books, because it's really not that bad, but you got like, when you got like gods getting their heads chopped off and stuff like that happening in a Thor comic, you know that there's no fun and games in this comic. Stuff is
I
just
think I would
now.
Read a Max Thor title about Jason Aaron, you know.
They made a Mech store, didn't they? Wanted like Garth Ennis or something.
Oh yeah, but that didn't. But that was. That was a Thor title on the basis that Thor was in it. It wasn't really a Thor story, you know? Yeah. Remember, it was something about time travel. It was called Vikings, and there was something about time travel, and, you know, something. World War II fighter pilots showed up just so you were sure it was a Garth Ennis comic.
Yeah.
Hello?
And now we have lost Chris Triplett's audio. Can more things go wrong, technically?
Sorry, my fault. I hit the mute on my
phone. Okay, there's nothing technical about that.
Nothing technical, just my stupidity.
Okay.
Yeah, but like, what's so great about the Thor book is basically, and they're kind of taking a different direction with it, too. I don't know how far this is going to go. It happened in the first issue. It's there in the second issue. The whole idea that there's like three time frames.
No, he says on the editorial page in the back, this is going to be the thing about his Thor run.
Oh wow.
Yeah, not that, just the first story arc. It is about these three Thors from different times. That's going to be...
I like that. I think I'm going to dig that. Yeah, and it's basically, you know, it's Thor at kind of a young age, a Thor who's not really, you know, learned all the lessons in life that he needs to learn to become a hero. It's Thor in the present. And then it's Thor, basically, when he's, you know, Lord of Asgard. He's old. He's like such an old man. He looks like Odin. You wouldn't even know it wasn't Odin if the book didn't tell you, oh, that's Thor. Because he's even missing an eye. He's got an eye patch and everything. And it's kind of a neat thing. And what's going on with the story is the big deal is there's this character. And I don't know if they've given him a name. They've just called him, what, like the Butcher?
The God Butcher is just what they call him right now.
And Thor has encountered him at these three points in time. Like, you know, when he's real young, he first he encountered like a dead god like on a shore. In the present, in the first issue, he actually found like a whole bunch of dead gods on this alien world. And then at the end of the first issue, it kind of looks like it's like at the end of ropes, you know, Thor's last Asgardian and all that stuff. But with this issue, it's more about the young Thor, which takes place around 893 AD, and he's kind of, you know, hanging out with some Vikings and just, you know, fighting people. You know, like the Vikings show up with a war, and he's not going to fight the people, but he wants to see like the other side's god show up. He wants to fight them, you know, just because he wants to get into a fight. And then when the other side's gods don't show up, he kind of knows something's wrong because one of their gods, like, you know, kind of rides like a Pegasus or something, and the Pegasus lands and it's like covered in blood. And you got this sense that, oh, you know, crap's going on. And this is like his first encounter with the God Butcher. And what I was talking about before about how, you know, it's almost like a Max book because you've got like he encounters another god on another Pegasus flying and like he's headless. You know, the Pegasus is still alive and flying up in the sky, but the god that was riding him is headless. And it's intense. The art just really works. I don't even know if I've ever seen this artist before. Do you know if they've done
something?
Asad
Ribic. So he's done a little Thor before. He did the Loki miniseries. Remember the one that's been re-released as in digital format as Blood Brothers?
Yeah, look,
yeah, he did that. That was him.
I was thinking the art looks familiar, but I couldn't place it. But yeah, I mean, now that you say that, it looks just like that. So
it's friggin' gorgeous.
It is really nice, and this God Butcher guy is freaky as hell. I don't know.
And I mean, it doesn't seem like it's gratuitous in its horribleness, because this is Thor at a time when he was full of violence and reaving and wenching and blooding. You know, this sort of thing seems very appropriate for a Thor story set in this time, you know?
Yeah. And I love how, like, it's basically just a big fight with the God Butcher. Thor's going to take him out and everything. And then you've got like this stuff that's kind of inner monologuing about this event in his life when he was younger, when there was another god who basically went on a murder spree. It's about, you know, him talking about how he realized what the difference between murder and war was. And it's just so interesting. You know, it's not what I was expecting. It's totally different from Matt Fraction's Thor. I mean, this is nothing like what Matt Fraction would.
Any random writer could have just written this, and it would have just been, well, how long is this fight with the God Butcher? Let me just three here. It's one,
a good portion
two,
of the book.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. It's a 9-page fight, you know. And any writer could have just written that, and that's all we would have got. And it's the fact that over the top of this, it's a story that doesn't have anything to do with the actual narrative here, but it's just it's a story of how Thor learned a lesson and saw for the first and only time like true insanity, true madness, and true evil in another living being. And this is the second time he's ever seen eyes like this, like the eyes of a killer like this, of a being that lives only to kill, and understood the difference between what murdering was and what killing in the name of war was. And it's tremendously good. It's that little journey into mystery feel of a story that you're being told that begs to be told out loud. You know, it's super good stuff, I have to say.
It's excellent. And one thing I noticed, so you know, the aliens from the first issue, you know, the alien gods where all of them died, they said we don't have gods here, you know, when the child was, you know, asking for rain and everything. The God Butcher, he makes me think of those. I mean, they show like the image at the end of like, you know, their god's dead, you know, catches back up with, you know, present day Thor. He kind of looks like them. Did you notice that? I mean, is that
maybe a little bit, but that might just be because they have featureless faces. It could be all the
days. I mean, I just think of maybe that's like leading us in a direction towards something or not. I mean, I don't know.
Figure he would have killed them like, first if he was one of them. Though. I know what you're saying, definitely, but you know, I don't know. And you know what's great about this as well is that although it's this rich, it's young Thor, it's brash Thor and everything, and it's a really great story as well. He really, although Thor is getting his ass handed to him in this story, a really important thing that for the character of Thor, when you really want to get down with Thor, and something the films got really right, is that he also manages to make Thor like totally badass as well. And you're like, like it's this scene. You know the scene I'm talking about.
One scene.
Yeah, when the God Butcher has him beaten. You know, he's run him through with his blade. You know, and he leans in and he wants to know. He wants to know what Thor is the god of. You know, what is it? Axis, drunkenness, vanity, or war, perhaps? I have killed so very many gods of war and gods of fear, gods of chaos, gods of blood and wrath and jealousy and lies, plagues and earthquakes, genocide and revenge, degradation, death. Very few gods of poetry and flowers, though I have killed those just the same. So tell me now, Prince of Asgard, before all you're able to do is whimper and scream, what was Thor the god of before he died? And Thor just goes, thunder. And a giant lightning bolt comes down and fries them both.
It's so badass. Yeah, I mean, good, it's well written, the art is great, and it's badass. I have three requirements for what makes me love a comic.
I was
so surprised. Yeah, if you guys aren't reading. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was surprised when I read this that it was predominantly the young Thor, but if this is going to be like the idea of the book going forward, then I can see why issues are going to just move back and forth between who gets the most of the spotlight now. I must say,
I said, we'll get like old Thor, maybe old Thor will be in it more.
I figure like logically next issue would be modern Thor, and then the next issue would be the present Thor. I mean, it's a five-parter, so who knows? How do you end a story like this, really, you know? I really don't know.
Very carefully.
I don't know how a story like this is going to unfold, you know? So I'm really interested to... It's not even really about the destination in the end, but it really, really is more, even more than usual, like about the journey and seeing how a story told across three simultaneous time periods, where essentially Thor can't win in two out of the three stories being told here, how that's going to play out, you know?
Yeah.
And he
has like a future looking pretty grim.
In the future, he might not even win there. And are they going to lock this in as the definite future, or does Aaron have something in mind to make this only a possible one? Because, I mean, the whole idea of the future here is that the God Butcher has killed every other god, and Thor is the last god left.
Yeah, he's sitting on the throne waiting for him to come for him.
That's it. It's just a Thor, king of a dead Asgard, just locked in his tower, waiting for death to come for him in the most literal way possible. And how friggin' awesome is that? And this is Thor. So he's not waiting for death. He's waiting for death to come so he can kick its ass.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really
Thor should be defeating Thor.
I love the character Thor, and I was still going to get the book, But now I'm so glad I'm getting this book and I'm keeping this book. While I've got just a second, I'm just going to go back to the Captain America number one real quick, because we had a cap from last week that we didn't really talk about. It was a good start to a new series. It gave us Rick Remender and John Romita Jr. doing the art on it. And I love me some John Romita Jr. art. And I know lots of people love Brubaker's cap. I was okay with Brubaker's cap. Some stories I liked, some I didn't. But I was ready for something different, and you can't get much more different than this.
Wow.
It's basically Captain America in another dimension fighting Arnim Zola.
It's doing one of those, like, World War II area, like, Republic serial. It's, what's it called? Like, Lost in Dimension Z or something like that? That's what it's called,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, you get to the end of the issue, and then you get out of the story, and it is Castaway in Dimension Z.
Dimension Z. It's actually, I'm saying Zed, Z, whatever, you know, but it's like, it's totally unapologetic. That's totally what it is. I mean, yeah. I didn't enjoy the first couple of pages of it, where
family?
Yeah. Steve Rogers, as a boy, well, you know what? He had a drunken Irish father.
Yeah.
Yeah, who used to slap him around. Yeah. Whoopsie fucking do. Like, every other superhero does not have an abusive parent in their friggin' past. Like,
But
his mother was good. His mother taught him to always stand up. Yeah. That's where Captain America gets his resolve from.
But you got past the first three pages. You then turn the page, and then you get shit like, you know, I'm fighting this lunatic. He calls himself the Green Skull. A borrowed persona that strikes a personal chord. A maniac hippie ranting that the only way to save is to kill off mankind. I'm thinking, what the hell am I jumping into here?
Greenpeace hippie version of the Red Skull. A Red Skull knockoff who's a hippie eco-terrorist, and he's the Green Skull. How fucking great is that? Like,
wow.
So I did enjoy that abusive dad backstory. Blah. But everything else came into, and I thought it's like the villain of it is Arnim Zola, and that's why it's called Dimension Z, or Dimension Z, whatever, because it's like a dimension that Zola has populated with his creations, and he wants Cap's super serum blood to make stronger monsters and creatures and whatever. And so, first of all, like, anybody coming up the film is going to be able to get into this as well, because it's Zola. It just seems like it just seems very well judged altogether. Yeah. Even if it is crazy wacky shit, it's still got those little connections that are going to work through. And I was a little, you know, Zola, I'm not going to spoil the very end of it, but like, I was quite surprised by the last page as well, and I was like, oh, okay, oh, I see what's going on here.
It's cool. I like it.
Pleasantly surprised with the direction they seem to want to fold the story in, and there could be a nature versus nurture thing coming in here, and of course it's going to be Cap trying. And I see it kind of brings the parent stuff at the start into focus, because obviously Cap's going to try to impart to this child the lessons that he was taught and so on and so forth, and it's like, I will not become my father because I am not drunk and Irish.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with it. I don't know. I don't know how well it's gonna pan out. Like, you know, going down a couple more issues, but I'm digging the first issue, so I'll keep. Yeah, it's cool.
How much Loki is in here?
No Loki anywhere.
Damn.
What is it? Young Avengers? Is that?
Yeah, that's why there's no Loki anywhere. You gotta wait for Young Avengers. I mean, the editorial page in Thor: God of Thunder, it just notes that Aaron notes like that is going to be a book about Thor. It's not that he's not going to do Asgard in the expanded cast of Thor eventually, but just like for right now, the remit of it, this is a book about Thor and what Thor does, not Thor and the huge supporting cast of Thor. And I like that, because we've got Journey into Mystery to be the world
cat,
of Thor, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to wait for Young Avengers for Loki.
Yeah.
I just got my young Loki back. I love little Loki.
Don't be
it's
counting
so
on
fun.
It. You've read the last issue, right?
Yes.
Well.
Why not? Can the girl dream?
It's
comic.
You know, remember when you were a kid and like the goldfish was belly up and it was sleeping?
everyone comes back.
And then there would be another goldfish, and they would you secretly replace the goldfish, right. And they wouldn't tell you. You'd think it was the same one. It's right. Like, there's this little Loki walking around in the pages of Young Avengers, but he's the little Loki your parents bought to replace the one that died.
Right. Except it's more of like the new goldfish that sort of consumed the other goldfish.
So I'm done with my books. I think I'm ready for some ponies.
Okay, let's get some ponies going then. All right, Nicole, it's pony time.
I don't know if you guys can hear or see me because my Skype has just went.
Everybody is frozen. This is the worst episode ever for video.
Okay, because I can't see any of y'all. I can hear you.
Chris McFeely is the only one that's moving, and he doesn't have his video all the way up. So I have a frozen Chris Triplett, a frozen Nicole, an iconed Chris McFeely.
You were frozen today.
Sorry.
No, it's not your fault.
I see JD and I see McFeely. McFeely is taking up my whole screen. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't even type to you guys, and I can't even see what's...
Yeah.
I can't see anything.
Best video episode ever.
Open place of us.
Okay.
So if you guys haven't heard, I'm kind of excited for this week.
Ponies!
Yay! Ponies! Well, because this issue was delayed a couple of weeks because there was so much demand for it, they had to delay it. So.
It was so amazing they had to write a little bit more, is what you meant to say, right?
Well, then they actually have like a little thing in the back here. It's like a little short, so I don't know if that has anything. Well, I bought $36 worth of pony cover.
Did you buy them all? Is that all of them?
I bought the box
the ponies.
Yeah, I bought the box set that features all six of the main six.
$24, or was that a different price?
This was $24.95.
Okay. Oh, they got for an extra 95 cents for the slipcase.
Yeah. So, and then I got the two retailer incentives, which was $7.
Do you get a chromium cover? Because if you don't, you know you're missing out.
On the dark.
But this one cover has glitter on it. And then for next month, they have a limited edition cover that comes with free temporary tattoos.
Oh my god. Is it the UK?
I don't know.
American comics don't come with temporary tattoos. That's what the UK comics come with.
Yes, temporary tattoos for the next issue.
They like just tattoos of the cutie marks?
I don't know. They haven't said anything. That would be awesome, though.
Tattoo it on your butt.
Yeah. You gotta put it on your flank. Boom, boom.
Wow.
You guys missed it. Too bad we didn't have video. I just patted my butt by saying that.
Wow.
Oh.
So, My Little Pony, issue one. Yes, I'm so excited for this. This is definitely a comic book for people that are following the TV show. Because right when you open up the first page, you notice it's the Cutie Mark Crusaders, the three little fillies that don't have their cutie marks yet. But they're trying so hard to get their cutie marks.
Can you can you define a cutie mark?
They're like the little tattoos on their flanks.
Is it like what? If you have like a rainbow on the side of you or something?
Stop using horse terminology. It's a butt.
It's not really on their butt. It's on the upper part of their leg.
Okay, I don't know anything about the ponies, but does the cutie marks give them like magical powers? Is that where they get their powers
it's
from?
Just, it and back, magically appears when your talent or your passion is revealed. So, like Fluttershy, she has a passion for animals. So she has butterflies on her. And Twilight Sparkle, who is not named after the damn books. Okay, she's been around for years, people. you know, Twilight being the stars and stuff, so she has stars on her flank. So. But so these three little fillies, you got Apple Bloom, Scootaloo, and Sweetie Belle. They're trying to find their cute, get their cutie marks, so they break into a zoo and try to become zoologists overnight. Now, you got to understand, they're little kids, so they think that if they put a lot of effort into it in one night, they're going to get their cutie marks. But
it's so like, if you got a zoologist cutie mark, would it just be like a, you know, the jail cell thing on there, you know, with an animal behind it or something? Is that what it would be? Like a cage with an animal behind it?
Who knows what might come out of it. There's this little pony called Silver Spoon, and she, of course, she has a silver spoon on her flank. So.
Wow.
I talk about flanks because these three little fillies, they really want to get their cutie marks because they got the derogatory name of being blank flank. So that you don't want to be a blank flank.
Yeah, I don't want to be
more of a comic.
I am. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to find their cutie marks, but they come across they're called the changelings. The changelings turn into the ponies, and they pretty much bury them in goo, and they become these other ponies. And so when they're when the other ponies are infected with this disease of changelings, they walk around like zombies. So you see like a lot of zombie ponies in this
zombie ponies.
So you
it's see, like two huge things colliding. Does the world explode now?
Ponies and zombies, kids.
A few ninjas in there, and we're done.
Yeah.
So you see at the end of this, the big, well, with them getting attacked by the changeling, and then you got the huge splash page, which is all over the internet right now, which it actually features the artist and the colorist as ponies. It actually features my favorite pony of all time, Firefly, so that's kind of a homage to G1. They also have ponies of the Blues Brothers, Magnum P.I., and Earl Hickey from My Name is Earl.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow.
Because I know the show has done a few little things like that. Like, it had Big Lebowski ponies at one stage.
Yes, they have a lot of pop culture in here. And so just
but the show doesn't really do like that much stuff like that. I just know the Lebowski ponies, but the comic is kind of just like magnifying it because it's like there's no question for who about who this comic is for, you know?
Yes, and like I said, this splash page has like all the favorites. Like I said, this comic is definitely geared for people that are into the TV show. So you've got Derpy in here, you've got Screwball, and you've got Doctor Who's also on here.
Wow.
So you get to understand that this is a busy town, and on this page you also see a lot of other ponies infected with the virus, the zombie virus. So you see a lot of zombified ponies. Well, the sisters Applejack and Rarity notice their little fillies are infected, so they got to go and try to.
I'm saying filly, it's fucking horse. They're just it's a fucking horse term.
Wow, what is your problem with horse terms?
It's weird.
Why? No, I'm
just messing around.
Come on, what?
They are fillies because they're younger and they're inexperienced and they're shorter and, you know, they're little
it
kids.
Just makes me think of human beings who use the phrase every pony.
They do say it here, too.
What is
it? That's okay when ponies use it, but whenever I see people, like, on the internet, addressing every pony, I'm like, you're not pony, shut up.
So basically, that's the whole issue. It's them trying to find out what's going on with these other ponies. Why are they zombified? And of course, they find out it's Queen Chrysalis and her changelings that are going around. So the changelings are.
Dun.
Yeah. So the changelings.
I have no idea who that is, Brian.
Wow. That sounds ominous. I don't know what that means.
Oh, wait. No.
So the main six are combating the queen and her changelings, but the changeling decided to all of them turn into Pinkie Pie. So you got tons of Pinkie Pies everywhere. And so, because Pinkie told them, she kind of does the smart one. They're like, okay, to not get trapped by the changelings and be zombified, you got to act like them. But, hey, you got to act zombified already. So it's kind of like The Walking Dead.
She's Shaun's of the Dead, then, right?
Yeah. It's a cute little panel of her looking like a zombie. So, and basically it ends with them, you know, you see Queen Chrysalis making her big speech, and well, they're like, oh wait, she's gonna give her plan away, and she's, you know how, you know, evil people start talking about their plans, and oh, she's dialoguing. Well, she heard that, and so she stops. So they don't know what her plan is anymore, but they're going off to fight her to get the Cutie Mark Crusaders back to their normal selves. So
that's curiously action oriented.
It is. There's a lot of action in here. Pinkie Pie.
I mean, I understand that the show does that sometimes, but that's not the general rule for the show. That it is generally, you know, fun tales of friendship. But occasionally they have these. There is a villain, and they must be stopped with friendship. Sorry, that.
One thing that they combat the changeling is Pinkie Pie uses her party cannon filled with sticky bubblegum batter.
There you go, friendship.
So there's just a lot. If you're a fan of the show, you're going to like it. The only problem I see is if you don't know anything about the show and you picked it up, you're probably be wondering, okay, who are these characters? What are they up to? But if you're a fan of the show, you're going to have...
It does sound curiously like targeted almost. I mean, I suppose really, like, is anybody not going to be... who's not going to know the show going to pick this up? So I suppose that eliminates all meh. Yeah, exactly. Like, it knows who it's for, I suppose, really. But yeah, I mean, but for, I don't know. I'm given to feel like the sheer surge of news that has come up around this and the sheer amount of copies that it's sold are sure to mean that somebody who doesn't watch the show is going to have picked it up.
Yeah.
Someone out there. Write in to Fanboy Versus. Send a postcard. If you picked up this comic,
even
because
if it,
you
even if it is
about
somebody, it's not seeing the show. I mean, how hard is it to get access to some of that content online somewhere? That's what that is.
The thing is, there are some really funny moments in here. Like when the Queen Chrysalis decides to change into Derpy. Derpy is this phenomenon that was an animation error that just went haywire with the TV show. And so
happens with shows.
Yeah, so she turns into Derpy, but when the changeling notices that when her eyes aren't skewed, so he hits her as hard as she can, so her eyes are skewed. It's kind of funny.
That's pretty funny, actually.
He's because he's looking at her like there's something off, so he hits the queen as hard as he can, so her eyes go.
Wow.
The animation. The artwork in here is great. I mean, it looks just like the TV show with its own little characteristics. Again, each panel has something you're like, oh, you're trying to look for like different background ponies, or oh, I remember this, or oh, I recognize that. Especially if you're a fan of G1, like I grew up with G1, there's a lot of G1 references in here too.
That's a pony term, I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, pony fandom did... And I don't mean this in a bad way, but they did steal the Transformers generation classification system.
Yeah, they did.
Wow.
So I'm sure I've asked this before, but is Friendship the new show? Is it basically G2? I know I've asked this before.
Oh, no, they're like three generations of ponies.
It's actually Generation 4.
So then what you're saying is this is Beast Machines.
I think if this is anything, this is probably the animated of ponies, isn't it? Because they don't call this Generation 4, right? They call this, like, Friendship is Magic. Because none of the other pony series actually had a subtitle. Yeah.
It is the fourth generation of animation for ponies.
God, now I'm thinking about a CG pony series.
That must have existed, surely. Surely there must have been some CG directed... I was about to say direct to pony movies.
Wow. Okay.
It's like the fucking Smurfs. Oh, this pony's gone direct to pony. Every pony.
Oh wow. I don't even know. Okay.
It's a cute comic. It's made for the fans and for the younger audience. But if you just want something innocent and just fun to read, some great artwork to look at, it's good. It was worth the $36 I spent on it, but I probably
God. I mean, that just makes me hurt when I think that. It's like,
I hope you don't have to spend as much for issue two, do you?
No, I'm
if
not.
If you needed to understand why 100,000 copies of this thing have sold, there is why.
God. 100,000 copies have sold to, like, 50 people.
These are the seven or eight covers that go out to all the comic book stores. They also have 30 different variants that went out to, like, specialized stores like Midtown Comics, Detroit Comics. And those issues alone are, like, $20, $30 a piece. Just
God.
Of course, and the thing is, most of them feature either Dr. Hooves or Derby.
Wow,
I wouldn't have been seen again.
Yeah, but it's a fun.
To be fair, every impartial review I've seen of this thing has given it at least 3 stars.
It seems
to generally be quite well regarded in what it sets out to do. It's all its feelings are just feelings of the show. You will find nothing deep and meaningful here, but that's not what it's here for, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of panels in here where Applejack is seriously worried about her sister. But it can get a little emotional, but not too deep. But it's kind of fun to see the creators put themselves as ponies, though. They've actually put the creators of the comic books on that splash page. But if you also know the creators of the TV show, they're hidden in the back panels as well.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
So. it's a fun one. I probably won't be, you know, reviewing it every month just to save your guys' ears.
Probably.
If something remarkable happens, I will review it, but it's a fun...
My God, comic. You guys, this pony did a pony and a pony, pony. Okay.
Just don't say Philly Mare Stallion, just Philly.
He, she, or it.
Wow.
Quite fine. Dude, guy, gal, stop saying pony words.
They also,
it's a little weird.
In here. Sakura, she's a zebra.
Okay.
Okay.
There you go. My review of My Little Pony.
Okay.
I loved it.
Sweet.
You guys, too. Just to go see, you know.
I probably would enjoy it if I ran it.
You just to see a pony get punched out by one of her minions is awesome.
That's rather amusing.
I don't think we're gonna surpass this, JD. You need to edit it so that this is the end of the show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, nothing seems like it could be as awesome.
I walking around like a zombie is awesome as well.
Wow. Okay. Cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna rush through then my stuff because that's just so awesome. There's no way I could follow it up. But so I'm gonna talk about two things fairly quickly. One of them I could not let go by, which is the final issue of the fourth part Silk Spectre Before Watchmen book. Before Watchmen, remember that? We haven't talked about it much in a while, mainly for two reasons. One being that the distribution schedule has gone all out of whack.
Moloch showed up. What's up with that?
Moloch showed up out of nowhere.
Literally the one comic we've gotten the last month.
Yeah. I got Ozymandias and Silk Spectre today. I mean, they had this beautiful schedule worked out where you got one a week for the next few months, and it's like all gone out the window.
I believe it's Comedian and Minuteman next week.
Wow.
It's not even the books that would normally go in between. The order is even... I mean, Silk Spectre we should have had next. After Minuteman was the last one on the rota that we got, so we should have had Silk Spectre next. But then it's like Night Owl and Comedian have to happen before Ozymandias. And
so if they're coming out like two at a time now, how do you know, I guess, which Crimson Corsair?
It's number. They're numbered.
They managed to still be getting those in order.
Are they?
Yeah, and I think
so. I
think
I
they're...
I don't know because I'm not getting them all. But
I thought they were, like, numbered. It's,
Yeah, they're numbered, so you can stop and read them later.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been reading any of the Corsair. I thought, well, when it gets done, maybe I'll go back and read it, but that's
not. Yeah, it's
not
numbered.
Really,
this
it's not really
numbered.
The reason I've been buying the books, you know? It's I yeah. don't care, really.
I just want to get one big trade and read them all if it's worth it. But for what you guys are saying, there's only two things I should be reading on this.
Pretty much. This would have been one of them.
Save your money and buy a poster of the Silk Spectre series, and you'll be good.
Yeah.
The art is like what's
awesome.
The art
awesome. Is amazing. The book's good, too. I mean, it's just, it's well-written and well-drawn. So, but I won't go into full detail, but this is basically the end of the story. In the previous issue, you know, her boyfriend was coerced into joining the army, and so Laurie's a little pissed about him up and leaving from her perspective. Hollis is sort of hot on her trail, and also the sort of drug lord that she's been sort of messing with as far as taking down part of his organization has just decided that they're going to have to pack bags and leaves, which basically means wiping out his entire organization, literally killing all of the people that, you know, were working there to kind of cover his tracks. So this comic ultimately leads up to the final confrontation between Laurie and this drug lord guy, which
I like to call him the guy in the hat because I don't even think we ever got a name for
I don't
it.
Know if we did. I think we did, yeah. But I don't remember it. But we'll just say that the boots come off and
yeah.
You know, she does some for real fighting in this, and it looked really bad for her for a moment. I hope they got the number on that bus, because there's one panel in this, though, that almost really made it worth it. It did that whole thing again where it sort of brought the comedian aspect. You know the panel I'm talking about.
I know about
you. Yeah, and there's a really great, I mean, it's a single panel of, like, the... I mean, it's just literally one panel, but it's like, oh, there's that possible comedian-esque future that we've seen for Laurie, you know, post Watchmen film. But yeah, really good stuff, though. Really good issue. I thought it put a really nice button on this story, leads you straight in, basically, to where you get introduced to the character, in Watchmen. So it does a really great job of, I think, bridging it, filling in the gap. So this does what Before Watchmen was supposed to do.
Yeah. It's solid. I mean, that's what's good about it. There's nothing really wrong with it.
No. It gives you more of the story. It establishes some things for the character and even some other characters. You know, it brings you right in and ends where it needs to, you know, so it's not like retreading, you know. I mean, that one scene there, which is the first meeting of the Crime Busters, it's just really the first part of it, but from Laurie's perspective, where she's sort of, you know, going around the room and, you know, saying what she thinks about everybody, her first impressions. So, solid good. You should read the four issue of Silk Spectre if you haven't. You know, it is one of the few redeeming bits so far out of Before Watchmen. So, and yeah, I
think it's going to wind up coming in a fairly distant second to Minutemen, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Minutemen has been really spot on. But this is the one where, you know, it could have gone in a lot of different directions, and I thought it did really well. And it's also the first one to end completely, so out of the story. So we now have the complete story for this, and I think as a, you know, reviewing it, on a whole, I thought it did really well. So, read it. The other thing I want to talk about is something that I didn't think I would be talking about because I picked this up on a whim, which is the second issue of Uncanny Avengers. And, I mean, the first issue ended with this, Red Skull and his crazy schemes. And so this is...
Oh, that Red Skull.
Yeah. Red Skull, will you never?
He ain't no Green Skull. I'll tell you that.
No, he's no Green Skull. But this is continuing into this sort of Avengers team that's going to be led by Havoc, and it really doesn't spend a lot of time on that. I mean, a little bit of where, you know, Wolverine sort of he's sort of questioning Captain America's whole idea of this Havoc-led team, of which the one thing is, like, Captain America keeps talking about, oh, you know, well, people trust Havoc, and he's, you know, got a great record and everything, and I'm sitting here thinking, I could have swore Havoc led a Brotherhood of Evil Mutants at one time.
Is that in a parallel universe?
No.
He might have been a parallel universe, but like in our universe, he was like the leader of X-Factor for years.
He was, and then after that, there was a period. I mean, like I said, I don't know how if it was retconned out or whatever, but there, I have an issue of X-Men.
I think you're thinking of Mutant X, where he was the leader of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the Brotherhood of Mutants in a parallel world, and they were the good guys.
Yeah.
No. I'll have to dig the issue out because I still have it.
Oh, okay.
There's an issue because it was something happened on a plane.
Yeah.
And
him and Scott Summers jumped out of the plane and survived. That's what you're
saying.
Well,
no,
No.
Havoc disappears in the explosion of a plane, which contains like a quantum generator or some shit, and he gets vroomed into a parallel universe. Yeah. This might not be the same plane. This might be something different. But Mutant X does begin with a plane explosion.
No. This is like there's something where like Scott and a couple of other X-Men are on a plane, and then Havoc and a couple of mutants attack it, and then there's a whole like half of the comic takes place as Scott and Havoc are falling out of the plane, you know, falling through the sky, fighting each other. In fact, that's the cover.
Did Havoc start as a villain? Was he a character that was a villain first? I can't remember.
No.
Okay.
No. Anyway, I know.
Maybe I was thinking of like a 60s comic that I haven't read.
No. This was a 90s issue for sure. So I will go. I will have to go dig it out, or I'll have to look it up later. I don't want to take the time to do it now, but I will look it up. Anyway.
I'm Wikipedia-ing it right now.
Yeah, see if you can find
after
that
the
one.
After the Age of Apocalypse, Havoc accidentally destroyed a dam and was forced back into his old containment suit. New members were introduced to X-Factor. Havoc fought random and was captured by the Dark Beast, brainwashed into serving Onslaught, broke free of the brainwashing, but used it as an opportunity to infiltrate the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Ah, that's what it was then. Because I bet that's what it was. Because that would be right around that time. It would have been around the time of...
God, at that point, I was done with the X-Men, I think.
Wow. But I did, like I said, that's why I said I could have swore I remembered that happening, so I'm not wrong. Okay, well, I'm wrong, but not completely wrong. I'm wrong in the sense that that's not the way it happened, but I was right because in that issue, that's what was happening.
It did happen. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So everybody's cool. Anyway, so everybody's apparently cool with Havoc. Havoc's apparently a really great guy. But I don't know if this character has been introduced before, but Red Skull's got a guy on his team called John the Living Propaganda.
No, I'm pretty sure these are all new guys, but that's so Grant Morrison.
Isn't that awesome? And what it is like he appears to you as someone that you trust. So, like, Red Skull's using him to sort of further his agenda by putting him on TV and saying things, and people are like, oh, cool. And so, like, in this particular sequence, this guy's talking about how we can't really trust the mutants, and there's a scene of, like, a father and son watching TV, and a cop in a diner, and a, what would seem to be a boyfriend and a girlfriend. And of this, it's like one of the people in each of those panels is a mutant. You know, like the boy has horns, and there's a woman that's floating, and then a dude with gills. And so as this guy is talking, like one of the two people that's not the mutant is like listening, and then like the dad goes to the kitchen and gets a knife, and the cop pulls out his gun, and the girl grabs a bottle, and they all kill one of these, you know, mutants that they're supposed to be, like, family members of hanging out with. So apparently, not only does he appear as someone that you trust, but it sort of brainwashes you. He is the living propaganda. Yeah.
Shaw Morrison.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
But we saw Rogue and Scarlet Witch captured in the last issue. About half of this issue is taken up with that. And basically Red Skull sort of laying out part of his plan as he's talking to Wanda. I don't know a lot about the various histories of the Red Skull. This version of the Red Skull is claiming to have been a clone, I guess?
Yeah, this is just... I legitimately think that this, in which essentially the Red Skull is, yeah, a clone created by Andrew Mazzola during the war who's just woken up out of cold storage, that seems to me to be purely created to justify the inherent silliness of this. Because it's like, well, first of all, the Red Skull's dead right now anyway, so they can't use him.
Right.
And second of all, it's like, if this was the real Red Skull, he probably would have tried to kill all mutants when he could fit them all into one house. You know, like last week before there were millions of them again.
Right.
In order to justify the idea of the Red Skull going after mutants, which is not an illogical idea, but in order to justify why he's never done it before, they have to go, it's a clone, he's just woke up, that's fine, yeah.
Yeah, because he makes the point is like to say that, you know, to him that was just a few weeks ago, you know. But yeah, and he's grafted part of Charles's brain into his own, so of course he has all those powers and stuff now. And
because
so,
that totally makes sense whenever you're shooting for racial purity. Yeah,
yeah, I know exactly. I was kind of like, this is like that time the Daleks like impurified themselves, and yeah, so.
Yeah, anyway. And it's going to end whenever they force him into a logic paradox, whenever they tell him he's a mutant, and he's going to explode.
He's going to
be like, no, and then his head explodes.
Yeah. I submit to you that you are a mutant.
No! So, yeah. But no, it was actually pretty good, though. I mean, this is a total wacky premise. I mean, I don't say that at all, that it's like, that it's not a bit odd. But hey, man, it's going to be...
I'm not judging it for it.
No, I mean, it's basically a hybrid Red Skull mutant, you know, fighting a hybrid X-Men Avengers team. I mean...
It's definitely something we haven't seen.
Yeah. You know? I'm pretty sure that one of these guys in the background is like a He-Man villain. And,
are you talking about the turtle guy?
No. There's like another guy on the side with like the frills on his head. Pretty sure that guy was a He-Man villain. But anyway,
wearing a fuzzy loincloth and has a torso that looks like four other dudes' torsos. That's a good way.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. Is that it? Yeah. So anyway, but yeah. And Red Skull's kind of creepy in this, so that's good too. So anyway, it's fun. I like it.
Thing about that book is I've concluded now that this is basically an X book.
It really kind of is. I mean, let's talk about the fact that
I think I said on the show before, I couldn't understand why they were trailing this book as the book, like the Marvel Now book, the premier Marvel Now book.
Cassidy does the art. That's why it's the premier fucking thing.
And that's why this issue is like 3 weeks late, and why next issue is probably not going to be out till January. They were thrilling it as the book and the premier book, and that by extension makes it the premier Avengers book. And I'm going, but Jonathan Hickman's on the bi-weekly Avengers book that you're about to launch. Talk about undercutting your own premise.
Yeah.
I've come to the conclusion now that it's an X book. Well, it's not even an X book. It's not an Avengers book or an X book. That's the thing, because All New X-Men is being promoted as the flagship book for X-Men until February, in which Uncanny X-Men is suddenly going to be promoted as the flagship book again. And that just leaves Uncanny X-Men as just this thing. It just is, and that's why I can't conceptualize it, I don't know what to think of it. It's just there.
It's not
the Avengers book, and it's not the X-Men book. It's just a book that's just happening. That's got an A-list artist with a creator who is, no harm to him, but he's not A-list, even though he's getting a lot of good press on the B-list books he's been working on lately. And it's just going to be chronically late because of the artist. And I'm like, I don't think you're not Joss Whedon, you know? You haven't earned...
Yeah,
the ability for your book to be as late as the last book this artist drew was.
Yeah.
I don't think the book's going to be able to survive that.
Talking about it, like, again, from the premise standpoint, it seems kind of odd for Captain America in this issue to be having a conversation with Wolverine and talking about having mutants on the Avengers. It's like, have you looked at your team lately?
Look at your team since 1964.
You know, it's like, you're talking to a mutant!
On the team since the Scarlet Witch joined in 1964.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and he's having this conversation with Wolverine, who is a mutant. I mean, mutants have been part of the makeup of Avengers forever. Just because, you know, people aren't necessarily identifying with them, you know, as mutants. It's like, you know, it's like seeing, it's like from a racial standpoint, it's like saying, oh, well, they're not really black. They've been around for a while. You know, they're not black. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
It's like the premise of the book is so wobbly. Like the idea that, oh, we're finally letting mutants on the Avengers. It's such a wobbly premise that it's like the only way they can sell it at all is for this to essentially be an X-Men book with Captain America and Thor and a few pages of it.
There's only two non-mutants
there and everything, and the Scarlet Witch can be considered to represent the Avengers side all they want from a creative standpoint, but the Scarlet Witch can be in an X-Men book as an X-Men character without representing the Avengers, and has been many times.
Captain America and Thor are the only non-mutants on this team.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and like they don't even have an Avengers villain. They're fighting the Red Skull. You know, they're fighting Captain America.
Yeah, they're fighting. But now he stole.
Ultron, then we'll talk like.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Red Skull that crosses that could be an Avengers or a Cap villain. I mean, he's a Cap villain, but like then I think of the Geoff Johns story, the whole Del Rusk thing, and I thought, you know, that was pretty good.
That's a bad story to think of.
He's fighting against mutants. This is an X-Men book.
It's not inherently illogical to use the Red Skull in this story, but it's just odd. You know, that's not even odd. I can see why they're doing this, but the hoops they have to jump through in order to justify why this story is happening now and with this character are.
Yeah,
distracting as well, you know.
You know,
it's
the
like
thing
Ultron
that I
is
find
a vengeance odd. Villain who could totally get down with destroying mutants. I'm like, if you wanted to do an Avengers thing.
Yeah.
I think the thing I find odd is that this is the second issue, and that's the second time that you still get a shot of a headless or a top headless part of Professor X. I mean, how many times are we going to see that?
We're going to see that a lot.
I think we're going to see that next issue, too.
Yeah. It's possible.
Yeah, that's when Havoc's going to come in and everyone's going to gasp when he sees it.
Oh, my gosh. So,
Dang it. I thought he was about racial purity. I don't get it.
But even at all that, and that's what I'm saying, it's like, despite not knowing what it, you know, it having sort of production questions around it, it's a decent book, if it'll come out, you know. If you'll be able
like
to read
it's shooting to be kind of like Wolverine and the X-Men, but it's not the right creative mixture on the creative team.
It's not Wolverine and the X-Men.
It wants to do wacky things like the Red Skull puts Professor X's brain in his own brain. You know that's
you know, I don't think wacky. When I think John Cassidy, I don't think wacky.
Exactly.
I think maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's the artist. Maybe they need a different artist. So
I don't think wacky when
better.
I think Nick Remender either. You know, if you told me this was by Jason Aaron and Nick Bradshaw, I'd be like, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
But then Rick Remender did that Cap issue, and I love that Cap issue.
Green Skull.
You know? Green Skull.
That's very true, actually, yeah.
So. I think it's the artist. I think maybe it's the artist. Maybe have it John Cassidy's actually hurting the book worse more than helping the book. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt the schedule of the book.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Chris McFeely, then. Round us out, sir, and get us out of here.
Okay. Well, okay. So, FF number one came out this week. Hooray. Yeah, y'all knew I was going to pick this up.
Well, yeah. I even picked it up, too.
Well, there you go.
I love the book.
It is the direct continuation, essentially, of where we left off with Fantastic Four number one, as this issue is about the four members of the FF going around and asking their selected people to come in and stand in for them while they go off on their interstellar journey. And it's intercut with single pages of the various children of the Future Foundation addressing, we know from the first panel that they are addressing Scott Lang, Ant-Man, and telling him about what they think about the Future Foundation and what it's for and how it's helping them and who they are in order to introduce themselves to the audience. And that's where the long and the short of it. That is the issue, you know? It is not about establishing a mission statement, because there isn't one really, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the sort of series, this is not like for example, to name a comic recently that didn't do that in its first issue. This is not like Captain Marvel, where it's the yet another series starring that character, and we need to know what it's going to be about, and you're going to have to tell us what's going to be different this time out. This, by its very nature, is already different. This series is going to be about these four characters as the heads of the Future Foundation while the Fantastic Four are away. And that is what this issue is setting up, you know, and it sets it up very well. We get Reed recruits Scott Lang, who I didn't even think about it, but like the point of him picking Scott Lang is that, as we know from the Children's Crusade, Avengers the Children's Crusade miniseries, he did lose his daughter recently. So Reed is kind of seeing this, putting him in charge of this school of children, which he initially balks at and runs away from, as possibly a way to help him, mm-hmm. not to replace his daughter or anything, but in a way to help him just sort of work through it. And I like that a lot. Sue recruits Medusa, and this is another one of those things where she goes to see Medusa, and it's like the comic remembers that Sue is still queen of that Atlantean colony,
mm-hmm.
and the Universal Inhuman Queens are all still in Atalan as well. So this book is succeeding with me almost purely on the fact that it is a direct continuation of Hickman's run already, just like anyway.
Yeah, it's like yay, those things are established, you know, now.
They are not something that the next writer can come in and just chuck away. Respect is being paid. And like, that was a large place, that was a big part of where Hickman succeeded at the start as well, because he took what was left over from Mark Miller's run and worked with it and drastically improved on it. I don't see Miller like drastically improving. So I don't see Fraction drastically improving on the idea Hickman had, but they're still here, and that is that just earns severe brownie points with me. As it is, I really like Mike Allred's art on this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was like the reason I got so excited about it. When I saw that promo for it with the four characters, and I was like, She-Hulk and Ant-Man's in it, but yeah, Mike Allred art looks so crazy.
I really like how he draws She-Hulk. I think it's the best looking She-Hulk I've seen in a comic for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
She is kind of disproportionate, you know. She is really broad shouldered and, but still quite shapely, and he draws her with quite a pretty face as well. I don't know what it is, but I just really like the way he draws She-Hulk in this. I love this. It's like, we don't get the full story of how Johnny's girlfriend is going to become Miss Thing just yet, but the scene, like, we go through all the scenes. We get Reed invites Scott Lang, Sue invites Medusa, the Thing invites She-Hulk, and then we cut to Johnny and Darla Deering, and he wakes up with a start, and like he's got a nightmare because he thinks he's forgotten something. So he checks his calendar to see what it is that he has to do, because he's forgotten. He has to ask somebody to replace him on the team. And he looks up in his calendar and he says, "Today on my calendar it says, oh, ask somebody about the Thing. That's no help." So he turns to Darla and he says, "You like the Thing? You know, Ben Grimm? Big, dumb, orange guy, you know, talks like an old-timey movie."
Which was, God, that line is awesome.
Yeah, sure, he's all right, I guess. Okay, I have asked somebody about the Thing. Let's get some breakfast.
He says, not as much as the Human Torch.
So we don't quite know how it is she's going to become Ms. Thing. Perhaps that'll be in issue 2 of Fantastic Four or something. But once again, it's the... I think I'm going to really like this Darla character, because it's the two scenes with her and Johnny in FF1 and Fantastic Four number 1 that have got the biggest laugh out of me in each issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the moments where I laugh and I go, okay, he's got it. I like what he's doing here. I think he just maybe has a really good handle on the Human Torch. I like it.
Yeah. Well, and not just that. I mean, there was other, like these intermittent parts too, like the Bentley Dragon Man part was great. I am neither man nor dragon. I am an android. And Bentley, let's see. Being part of the FF has meant meeting many beings that I will one day subjugate.
I'm a clone from a supervillain, it's in my bones. I've never understood why these Moloids and these two Atlantean kids are on this thing. I've never seen them do anything that justifies, that suggests they have the massive intelligence and foresight to be part of the Future Foundation. But I don't care, because I love these Moloids.
Oh, God.
They're
pleasing the Ben!
The Ben took us from dark to light to this great place of silver and glass and explosions. Where we are of many places. We have seen many things. Space places. Yes. Shoes for the Ben.
Many places, glass and explosions. I mean, this is just a great, fun, you know, interaction too.
I mean, this looks like it's going to be like the zany of the two books, and justifiably so. You know, this is a premise, a high concept that can give way to some extreme zaniness, as can the Fantastic Four in general and the things that they do. But it seems like Fantastic Four will be a bit more straight, and this will be like just having a bit more fun. Because, like, you know, all in all, ultimately, FF here, it's not a book that really needs to exist. We said this before, that all the Marvel books were through. It's like, if FF ended after Hickman and Fantastic Four just carried on, that will be okay. This book, FF, like, really only continued to exist because Marvel just decided to milk people who were already reading the book and figured they could sell them two books for 8 months or however long that ran on. This is not a book that needs to exist, but it is a book that, with this choice of cast, has now established itself as something quite distinct from Fantastic Four, and something that is now worth a go on its own merits with a fairly eclectic cast, and a first issue that seems like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, in
way, as you guys know, but it's one of those things where I was going to get it anyway, and then I read the first issue and I was like, oh, thank God, I'm going to get this and it's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I almost might read this over reading Fantastic Four, just because
I think it's going to be the more fun book of the two, and also I think it's just kind of neat that 3/4 of the cast are female characters. Not just female characters, strong female lead characters, you know, you could like lead a book at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Good point, Chris Triplett.
I didn't even notice. I think that gives even more high ground.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, we totally give that one to Chris Triplett, because I mean, while I like knew it subconsciously, I wasn't like...
I feel like we started this podcast on kind of a weird, shitty tangent, and I felt like we needed to end it on a more of a positive thing.
On a positive, shitty tangent. Yes. Good idea. No, but seriously, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a predominantly female team. I mean, yeah, it's led by a dude, but, you know, and even for the zaniness and things, I think it's going to have some of those tender moments. I mean, we're talking about Scott Lang here. Dude just lost his daughter. So,
yeah.
You know, there is the potential there to have some heavier moments. Plus, you know, I'm wondering if, like, Miss Thing is not going to become a little bit of a POV character, in the sense that, you know, she's going to be fish out of water in this deal, a little bit, you know.
That character is one where they're going to have to be careful how they play her, because they can't, like, I imagine at the start we will probably, she'll just be a kind of ditzy, celebutante, just sort of their character who'll do a lot of comic relief stuff, and they're going to have to be careful with how they play her, because they're going to have to, you're going to have to be a little more than that, I think.
Well,
I don't doubt that there are plans in place for what'll happen there, but
they're going to have to. I mean, two things tell me that I mean, don't make me concerned in the slightest. One is that, you know, reading Hawkeye, you know, I know that Fraction does really well with writing women. And considering the one he sleeps with every night and the relationship that they have, you know, I don't doubt that he is going to pay, you know, that he is going to do really well with that character. I would be shocked if that character turns into, like, a caricature. You know, totally expect that...
I think she'll start out that way and grow out of it, is all I'm saying.
Exactly,
it's like one of those things where they'll just have to be careful how heavily they play it. So that they don't have readers just, like, reacting against her early before the character's had a chance to grow, is what I mean.
And I don't even think the character has done... I mean, considering the preview issue plus this, you know, been...
She's not dumb or anything.
No, and she's not been played that way.
Dumb. She's not that.
In fact, I would say Human Torch is dumber than she is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
I mean, exactly. And so that's why I say it's like, I expect Fraction is going to do well with this. I have to take something back, which is that, you know, a year ago on this show, I might have been talking down Fraction a little bit and calling him too much of a hipster or whatever.
It was bad times.
And, you know, at the time, that was probably fair, but...
He suffered through fear itself.
Yeah, you know, yeah. But now, it's like seeing his FF, seeing his Fantastic Four, Hawkeye just being amazing, you know.
I know.
Bravo. Bravo. Yeah, I trust you now, Matt Fraction. You are on my trusted list.
It's like these seem to be the sorts of books that he's well suited to. I don't know what the common denominator is with these books that makes him well suited to them, but as long as we never have to get a Fear Itself again, I'll be happy.
Yeah, long no.
Let's not do
no.
that.
No, no Fear Itself. No, don't do that again. No, no.
Maybe it's the cosmic mythological stuff that
he just doesn't do well. He seems to be well grounded. I think that's. I mean, I'd say if it's sort of earthly and grounded, maybe. And that's not to say he can't be spectacular. Like, I mean, I think we're going to see that stuff out of, you know, Fantastic Four. But that's not the same thing as to say like. Mythological or mystical, yeah.
That's
or
the,
you know,
that's the one thing that I'm trying to. I mean, it's like his Thor was never bad, but it was always meh, and Fear Itself was just bad. So, yeah. I'm a little that's why I was worried going into Fantastic Four because that is actively going to be a book about how they're going to go off through space and time. And I'm like, watch it there, Buster. Well, the Future Foundation is going to, they're still going to be on Earth and doing it seems like it's going to be very much. About the interaction of the new teachers and the kids and everything, and them teaching one another.
Yeah,
and I would say, like I was still filled with confidence after Fantastic Four number one. But if you were to tell me, if you were to like make me pick between the two books, which I feel like safer about, it would be FF.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So
that's
good.
FF.
So it's fun. Nice. I will go down as saying I was very surprised by this book. I was not expecting, and it may have been because I wasn't expecting much, but I was really happy with it. Really happy.
I'll just round us out then with a brief look at New Avengers number 34, because it's the very last Bendis New Avengers.
Thank God. I mean, wait.
In which Doctor Strange fights Damian Drum. Not Damian Drum, is that his name? I don't even remember his name. Voodoo's brother, you know. Who's a ghost. And who, like, jumps from Avenger to Avenger, possessing them and forcing Doctor Strange to fight them all. He triumphs in the end, and the Ancient One watches it, you know, from the next plane, and seeing his victory, and seeing his mastery of the forces that he feared had corrupted him and forced him to shed his Sorcerer Supreme mantle way back when in Bendis' New Avengers, the Ancient One bestows the title of Sorcerer Supreme on Doctor Strange once again. Hooray! That was
no.
pretty cool. I like that.
But,
and
shocking.
The issue ends with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones saying, smell you later.
Basically.
And Lydia.
Nice.
Sell Avengers Mansion back to Tony Stark and Lee.
I liked that he sold it back for $5. He's like, didn't I sell it to you for $1? And he says, I thought I'd make a profit over you. I thought you'd appreciate that. He says, I do.
I do, yeah.
Wow.
No, I mean, altogether, this is definitely more... This is definitely the issue that is more about being, like, the final issue of Bendis' Avengers, which makes me wonder why they didn't put the little goodbye essay from Avengers number one in this instead, because this is where it would be more at home, because... I mean, accepting like the first four volumes of New Avengers, which was about Bendis sort of struggling to convince an audience who weren't buying it that these were the real Avengers. Ever since Civil War, whenever New Avengers got redefined as Luke Cage's Underground Avengers, that is really, to me anyway, that is when Bendis' Avengers came into its own. And that was what they flagged up whenever we got to the end of the original New Avengers series and we got the finale issue, and it was about like the karmic reward of Luke and his team finally being free of the yoke of registration and able to walk the streets as free men once again. And this is, again, about Luke Cage and Jessica Jones calling it quits, and it's an end to all of that. And Doctor Strange is Sorcerer Supreme again, something else Bendis took away, another toy put back in the box. And, you know, there's a little montage sequence where Luke remembers, like, Dark Reign and Secret Invasion and Fear Itself. And, of course, I think they're just – the Hood's there. And I think they're having a joke at this stage when one of the images in the montage is everybody sitting around the table eating breakfast.
One of the images was sitting around the table, and I thought, yep.
That is 90% Bandit's Revenge by volume. And it's like the really weird thing, though, is like they do a jam in this the way they did in the – I mean they're doing these jams like this is what happened in New Avengers Finale. They did like flashbacks over all the major events of Avengers history with art by different artists. And they did one in New Avengers Finale. They did one in Avengers Finale right after Avengers is assembled. Then they did another one in a New Avengers Finale where it was, you know, going back over all the major moments of New Avengers with art by the artists who did those story arcs. And they did one in the last issue of Avengers where it was a fight montage different, but it was all by artists who'd worked on Avengers post Bendis' Avengers, you know, post Heroic Age. And in this one they do a jam sequence of Doctor Strange fighting each of the different Avengers by no artists who have worked on the book.
Yeah, okay. It was so weird. Yeah, and I saw those, I was like,
they
what?
Specifically get Michael A. von Oeming Michael A. von Oeming, is it? It looks like it, but it's not.
Now, Oeming did an issue of Avengers, didn't
he?
He did,
yeah. This page, Hulk versus Doctor Strange versus Red Hulk, it kind of looks like Oeming, but it's actually not. Yeah. Chuck B., whoever that is. And then Farrell Dalrymple, Ming Doyle, Lucy Kinsley, Becky Cloonan, and Yves Bigarel do single pages in this jam sequence. And they're, except for like Becky Cloonan, who does like who's a great artist and does a lovely... a normal action page. All of the other ones are like by alternative artists who draw things in the weirdest friggin' style.
Who did Captain Marvel that page? Who was that?
Yeah, that's that Yves Bigarel. And it's kind of weird, super deformed. It's almost super deformed manga.
It's like super deformed manga esque. And when I saw that, you know, I was thinking about the artist on Captain Marvel. How we kind of was at one point thinking, oh, it just kind of doesn't fit. It's kind of dark. And then I see this, and this is like the total other side, real cartoony.
Yeah,
I was like thinking,
like, this don't fit either. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's got to be somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in between is what we're looking for. And then it's like the page of Strange versus Captain America, which is by Lucy Kinsley. It's all of it's lovely art, but that's like a page out of a children's storybook. It's like, I don't get it. Why have you done this here and not in place of Luke Cage's like flashback sequence? Why did you not have Luke do some proper full-on flashback? Because they just used clipped from past issues for Luke's double-page spread of memories of Civil War and Dark Reign and the Hood and everything. And it's certainly a better final issue than the final issue of Avengers, because it is about rounding out like some central themes of Bendis's run and giving it, providing an end to one of his main POV characters, and also putting the Doctor Strange toy back in order. It's still not a tremendous issue, and it's still a great exemplar of the notion that Bendis's best ideas are absolutely behind him, and another reaffirmation of the fact that Siege should have been the end of Bendis's Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Well, none of his best ideas are behind him. His Avengers.
That's what I mean. His best Avengers.
His Ultimate Spider-Man is still quite good.
Oh, God, yes, absolutely. Also, Victoria Hand, could somebody just take that statue the fuck out?
Yeah.
Victoria Hand does not deserve a friggin' statue in the Avengers Memorial Garden.
What?
Like, I wonder how
she died a year or two back. She was possessed by Dr. Voodoo's brother's ghost, and he killed her. And it was like, big hairy deal. It wasn't even a big deal when she died. She practically died off panel. And I'm like, Bendis, stop it. It's like,
so
Maria Hill was never any good, so stop trying to... It's like Maria Hill, Quake, and Victoria Hand are these three characters of Bendis's that he seems to see something in, but that no one else does. And he keeps using them. And I'm like, right, you know what? She is never going to be mentioned again.
I want the Masters of Evil to actually show up in the first issue of Hickman's Avengers, and they attack the first thing they blow up is that statue. It just explodes.
Oh my god!
They can't, though, because that'd be a hate crime because she's gay.
Oh my god!
Actually, you know, that's one thing I would always have said for Hand, was that the fact that she was gay was never a thing. She was just gay. It was that was done as well as Max Modell's coming out was, where she walked into a room and her partner was there, and it was just casually established through casual conversation that they were partners, and they didn't make it a big thing, and it never influenced her character or anything at all. That was actually a very good element of Victoria Hahn's character. It's the only good element of Victoria Hahn's character. I really wanted her to be working for Norman Osborn, and I really wouldn't mind if Spider-Man had got the chance to punch her.
Yeah. Yeah, because, wow. Like, there's even the scene where they're, like, at sort of this kind of funeral scene, and they're like, you know, I really liked her. And, like, then you see Spidey say, I was hoping that when Strange got rid of Daniel Drum, she would magically come back to life or something. And I'm, like, thinking back to when he hated her.
Like, he wouldn't wish anybody dead, but... It's like that's the best thing Spidey can actually say. He can't actually say anything good about her. All he can say is, I kind of wish she wasn't dead. It's the best compliment he can pay this woman who he has actively hated for the entirety of this comic series. Like,
yeah.
And who presented many, many reasons to be hateable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And who I never really felt we got a concrete answer on whether she actually was working for Osborn or not. She was like a triple or quadruple agent, and I was like, if somebody wanted to punch her, I wouldn't raise a fuss.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, Victoria Hand. Bye-bye, Michael Bendis' Avengers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Can't wait to the next issue of Avengers.
Oh, yes, that's what...
Yes. So... Cool.
Time.
Wow. We've almost dragged the show out to like 2 hours.
Just about.
It's amazing.
Hey, can I give a shameless plug?
Yes.
Because I was involved in a project.
Okay.
It has to do with comic books. The Old Oil House and the Nurse Fear did a dramatization of the death of Optimus Prime. Mm. And I was one of the voices. So go and check that out if they did at awesome job. Their hard work definitely paid off. Tons of background audio and different voices. People that you probably, if you've listened to any of the Nerdsphere podcasts.
Who do you play in it?
Pretty much. I play the computer voice.
Oh.
Yeah, I play the computer. And
I was sitting there, I was trying to think, I can't think of any female characters. It's the IDW universe. There's RC. That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I played the computer voice, and I was trying to do a computer voice, but then I sounded like a phone sex operator.
Nice.
They still used it anyway. Nice. So I only have a few lines, but I still enjoyed it. The rest of it is awesomely done. It's great. So go over to the nerdsphere.blogspot.com and go download that, because if you're a fan of Transformers, you're going to like it. Their production is great.
Nice.
So awesome. Gruffalo did it. Tiny and Adam White, I think they were the ones that were all involved in the major production of it.
I was supposed to be a part of that, but it couldn't happen as a result of...
Oh, bummer.
Terminal shit I've had to go through in the last couple of months.
Yeah, that's...
I was supposed to be on it, and then I never got called back. So
oh.
I don't know what
have on good authority that something else may be in the works, though, that I'm hoping that I'll be able to get a part in this time run. Saying nothing more than that.
I listened to it 4 times in a row because it was so well done.
Wow. Cool.
Great stuff.
Very
great
good. Stuff. Yeah, so check it out. Old Oil House. Good stuff over there. So, we like those guys. Grufflock was on the show.
Yep, so go over there and check it out and go download it. It's 25 minutes or something like that. So
cool.
Yeah. I don't remember if I... Just talking about the Old Oil House, I don't remember. Did I plug the time I was on there doing an Iacon 101? Or is it 201 now? Because you know how reserved and kind and calm a person.
Yeah, I heard. I know you mentioned that we needed to listen to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I remember if I ever plugged that way back when, but it has gone up in the interim. So, it was recorded at Auto Assembly. So I'm...
Oh my gosh, that was a lot of fun to listen to.
If you ever want to actually hear me, you know, go off and say bad things about something, that's on there.
Wow.
God, I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Well,
if you want to see my calm demeanor break and have me actually get angry about something, I know it's like unheard of, but that's over there. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, most of the Iacons last less than a half hour. Somehow McFeely made it an hour and a half.
That wasn't an hour and a half. That's a dirty lie.
I can't remember how long it was.
It just seemed like that because it's not bad. No.
It's fun stuff. So go check it out.
Yeah, we'll do that in post. Okay, but all right. Well, I guess we should get out of here because this show has gone longer than I intended.
It hasn't gone that long.
No, it hasn't. Just I was thinking.
We started late.
Yeah, we did. So that's fine. But anyway, cool stuff. So thank you so much. Go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Join us live each week, tfradio.net/live. At times that are available. I can't remember what they are. 3 p.m. Central, so 4 p.m. Eastern and 9 p.m. GMT.
Something.
Not time. Just GMT.
Yeah, that's right, GMT is the T sound.
The T is implied. So you can do that. And also follow us on Twitter at FanboyVS. So there you go. That's all the cool ways to get in touch with us. We would love your feedback. So please give it to us. You can send us an email through the website or give us a mention on Twitter. Lots of people do that. We appreciate it.
Don't forget, the end of the show, the end of the year is coming up. So yes. We're doing our best of show. So if you want to send us some of your recommendations for what's been best in the year. I mean, what are we looking at? We're looking at basically best ongoing series, best new series, best mini series, best writer, best artist, and best single issue, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds, that's, I think that pretty much would cover it.
I've been going through my stuff, and I'm like,
yeah, okay. It's a tough year too. There's some good stuff that came out this year. Yeah.
So let's see what Saga was this year. So best new series, got that. Okay,
don't blow it.
God, shut up.
No, I'm not saying that's what I'm voting. I'm just saying that that's how it's going to go anyway.
Yeah,
right. You're like, regardless of whatever we might think or whatever nominees may be, that's probably going
to
be
it. We got to come up with four different ones. We got to have one each.
Yeah, we need to have like one each. So. Anyway, so that'll be coming up. We'll be doing that pretty quick, actually. I guess we'll wait till after the end of the year.
I mean, the last year, obviously, the whole unless we did like Spidey 700 and the best of the year in one show.
Yeah, which we might be able to do that.
I mean, that would be what? That would be the 28th, 29th, thereabouts.
Yeah, I think so. That'd probably work out.
Sunday the 30th. Oh, well, Sunday the 30th it would be. Might be able to do that then. Unless we're all busy with the holidays.
No, not yet.
Nah. January the 6th at the latest then.
Yeah. Sweet. Okay, very good. We're going to get out of here. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it will be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.